I don't like to use the term fake news. It's so overused, but it really does exist. I want to show you today and much more.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My friends, you are tuned in to the right broadcast at the right time. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. I want to welcome all of our new podcast listeners and different online services. So glad that you found us at the Line of Fire, that we found you. Our honor, privilege to be with you. And friends, as I'm with you day in, day out now, 12 years on Daily Talk Radio, my goal is to honor the Lord and serve you. My goal is not to win popularity. My goal is not to get more clicks on our videos. My goal is not to be better known. My goal is not to make you happy. My goal is to honor God and serve you. And we really do strive by God's grace to be your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity. We really do prayerfully try to get God's mind, step back from the craziness of the world around us and get wisdom. Get God's mind, get God's understanding. That may mean sometimes that we misunderstand each other. That may mean at times that I say something that puts you off a little bit, or that you say something that challenges me. But if we're committed to honor the Lord and listen to one another, we will make progress. And if we can't do it here as followers of Jesus on live talk radio with people interacting on Facebook, YouTube, so all of our social media platforms, as well as we're doing our live stream, if we can't do that here, where is it going to happen? Where is it going to happen in America? Here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I've got an important announcement for you about my forthcoming book, Evangelicals at the Crossroads, Will We Pass the Trump Test? I'll share that with you momentarily. But where we're going to go on this show in a bit, I want to talk to you about the phenomenon of fake news. It's a term I don't use a lot because it's so overused. And then it's our convenient way of ignoring whatever we don't like. Fake news. But it does exist. And I want to illustrate it for you with some recent events to show you how nefarious, how dangerous it can be, how our minds are getting shaped by what other people are telling us, and we don't even realize it. Before we get to that, though, can I be, once again, totally, absolutely candid with all of you? Can I do that? And those who have been listening regularly, have I earned your trust sufficiently to be totally candid with you? I hope so. And those who are newer to me, just read a few articles, listened to a few broadcasts, watched a few videos, please hear me, because there's a history here with those that I've been interacting with regularly for a dozen years. And those that have known my ministry and followed me for decades, as I began preaching in 1973 at the age of 18. Sometimes I get a little frustrated when people listen, but they don't listen. They hear the surface of what I'm saying, but not the substance of what I'm saying. And it's as if every day, every article, every statement, you have to prove yourself again so that people will listen to what you're saying. And it's really counterproductive, and it's harder for me then to be a blessing and help to you. So let me explain what I'm talking about. If you have followed me over the years, you know that when there have been difficult race-related issues in America, for example, the killing of Trayvon Martin by George Zimmerman, we talked about it very openly on the air. And I established parameters then, and I said, listen, let's just be open and honest with each other. I want to hear your thoughts. And if you offend me, that's not a problem. I want you to be truthful. But in the same token, I want you to allow me to be truthful as I speak to you. And if that offends you, then you're asking for truth. And then we'll process it. Sometimes we're both speaking truthfully, but different perspectives of the same thing. Sometimes I have half the story, you have the other half of the story. Sometimes you're entirely right. Sometimes I'm entirely right. There are various possibilities time around. But I have been determined to walk through issues with you. And when I wrote my book, Revolution, that came out in the year 2000, I immersed myself in reading about movements that changed the world for better or worse. So it could be Communist Manifesto, it could be some Mao's Little Red Book, or a book on jihad on the negative side, or on the positive side, things about civil rights movement. I tried to read and understand revolutionary movements for good or bad. So that's when I got a lot of writings of Martin Luther King. I got stuff about Malcolm X as well. I read about prophetic black voices in the church in American history. I even read things like Huey Newton's Revolutionary Suicide. He was the leader of the Black Panthers. I was just trying to understand social movements, how things happen, the cry of the oppressed, a valid response, an invalid response. And as one who for decades has spoken to the church about anti-Semitic history, about the church's sins against the Jewish people through history, I have no problem whatsoever as a white believer speaking about the sins of the white church against the black church or white society against black society in America, Europe. I have no problem with that. In other words, we're in a fallen world, and even within the church, there have been blind spots and there's been sin. So where there's an issue, by all means, let's address it or let's recognize something from the past. I have no desire for a Christian today to feel some type of collective guilt for what the church did to the Jewish people in the Middle Ages. But I want people to be aware of the history and understand why Jews respond to the gospel a certain way. Sometimes it's because of the memory of church history. In the same way, a black American could say, hey, when we see the killing of George Floyd, we remember the lynchings, we remember this. In other words, there's a history, there's a context. So I've done my best to understand that, to listen to friends that have shared perspectives that I missed, to recommend things for me to read and immerse myself in to get a better perspective, because we all have our own life experience. You haven't been with me 200 trips outside the United States. You haven't been with me when I've been on the streets of Jerusalem talking to rabbis. You haven't been with me as I risk my life preaching to Hindus in India. But I haven't been with you in your life experience and in your upbringing and in your culture, right? So we have conversations and we interact with each other. And right on the way up here, I was talking with a dear black brother, just gotten to know him by phone recently, one of our regular listeners here. And he said, if a black person says white supremacy, what do you think they mean? I said, I think they mean that whites have the inside track and blacks have the outside track by history and by design. He said, exactly. I said, but when the secular media uses it, they're using it differently. So here's the fine line I'm trying to walk. And sometimes I get a little frustrated because I feel like some folks are just ready to jump without hearing. I read an article yesterday, and I explained in that article that I don't believe race is what's really dividing us here in America. And in the article, I said, absolutely, there are race issues we have to deal with. Absolutely, I believe it's harder in America to be a black American than a white American on average. I go through all that. And I have, even a lot of my conservative friends are upset with me for this. I have no problem looking for examples of systemic racism or injustice or inequity. I believe we need to look at those things, and in certain levels they exist. At the same time, I don't believe ultimately race is what's dividing us in America. I believe most Americans don't want to be racist. And most Americans, if they see a problem, will want to fix it when it comes to race issues. We may not all agree on the solutions, but I believe there's a heart to do it. But there is a force at work that is demonic that's trying to divide us. That's my point. And that there are radical elements in the society, the radical right, which has been largely marginalized, but that would divide one way. That would be the way of real overt white supremacy against everybody, also Jew-hating, by the way. And then the radical left, and the radical left is now the darling of the secular media and the one that's being celebrated. So I see those forces at things really at work to divide us. And people will shout back at me, how can you say racism doesn't exist? I didn't say racism doesn't exist. The thought never entered my mind. I've been an advocate and an ally for my black brothers and sisters for years to say, let your pain, let your frustration, let your perspective be heard. Look, I mentioned the story, but I was flying from Phoenix to California a few months back, and sitting next to a very well-dressed black man, we began to talk. He was a bishop in his church. And as we began to talk about racism, he said, you know why I dress up like this when I travel? So why? I said, because otherwise people wonder, what's a black man doing in first class? I fly first class all the time because I get free upgrades because I travel so much. All right? He's absolutely right. That if you see, it was like, oh, you're an athlete or maybe like a rap star or dressed well, you're a businessman. Okay, you belong. In other words, there is stuff in people's mind. He's absolutely right. I told him, you're right, man. I understand that. He said, even when he's getting served, it's like, oh, okay, do you belong or not? That's in the year 2020. So I've sought to bring this perspective up as well. At the same time, my insides are shaking with intensity, saying, America, wake up. This is not primarily about race. There is a radical leftist, Marxist, destructive, chaotic, anarchist, there's such a word, an anarchist spirit, a lawless spirit that's at work that wants to destroy. So I'm trying to shout that out. On the one hand, absolutely with the top of my lungs, saying, yes, Black Lives Matter. And if anyone gives you the impression that they don't matter, I'm shouting out with you that they do matter. At the same time, I'm warning about this divisive, destructive agenda that wants to destroy all of us, that will do no good for our kids or grandkids or the future of America, that will ultimately fight against the gospel because it's anti-God, anti-Christian, out of truth. I'm trying to separate that from standing against racism. And people are, why are you downplaying racism? I am not. I am underscoring the negative, destructive forces that are out there. I am drawing attention to demonic powers that want to destroy. I am seeking, in that sense, to be prophetic and not just to look at what we see with our eyes, even though what we see with our eyes is pretty overt and pretty scary and pretty intense. Instead, I also want to point to what is happening on a deeper spiritual level. So I'm not going to say it the way everybody wants me to say it every day. My white friends, my black friends, Asian friends, Hispanic friends, Jewish friends, believing friends, non-believing friends. I'm trying to speak the truth in love. So please hear me. And for those who don't know me, don't judge by a word here or there. Read the articles. Watch the videos. Listen to the broadcast. Get to know my heart. Hey, listen, if you believe in what we're doing, everyone right now watching on Facebook, there's a donate button on the screen. Whether your gift is $5 or $50 or $1 or $100, it makes a difference. We have massive vision in front of us that's going to enable us to put out even more quality content to reach even more people. We do it with your help. If you're watching on YouTube, there's a dollar sign right beneath the chat screen. Click on that for your donation. Of course, everyone listening, podcast, radio, go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on donate. Friends, together, we're making a difference. All right, some real fake news when we come back.
Oh, God of burning, cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. You get to weigh in. Going to be bringing on a guest for a few minutes at the bottom of the hour, but otherwise we'll be able to take your calls today, 866-34-TRUTH. Feel free to agree with me, disagree with me, shout an amen, tell me I'm wrong. Let's have a conversation. All right. I don't use the term fake news a lot. One, it is so overused. And two, it's a simple way of dismissing something I don't like. That's just fake news. And I watch it happen on every side. I watch it happen on the left. I watch it happen on the right. I watch it happen in Christian circles, non-Christian circles. People just dismiss what they don't like as fake news. On the other hand, the reason that the president got so much traction by using the term fake news is because many believe that newscasters, article writers, others are not giving news as much as opinion, but casting the opinion as if it was actually news. So this got my attention with President Trump's Tulsa rally this past Saturday. Now, this is not to be pro-Trump or anti-Trump. This is to be pro-truth. It struck me as a perfect illustration. So what happens? There's great expectation for the rally. There are reports of 1 million people who have put in reservations saying they want to be there. So obviously not 1 million people from the immediate area coming, but just people can click on a button and say they're coming. Trump was going to address an overflow crowd first, and then the crowd within the convention center, which seated like 19,000 people, something like that. And this big event, and the place is going to be packed. Well, it ends up that, according to the local fire department, maybe about 6,200 were there. Now, others said, look at the pictures, look at the empty seats. It was way more than that actually there. But this is in the midst of COVID-19, and there were protesters and things like that. And then there were reports that TikTok, social media, growing giant, young people in China using TikTok got out this mass participation for people to register as if they were going. Hence, you got this crazy number of a million. Did people stay away because of that? All these questions, all these issues. Obviously, Trump and his people were expecting more, hoping for more. But what struck me was the way that this was being reported. So one headline gives us six reasons, six excuses. This is on CNN, Chris Saliza. Six excuses for why the Trump-Tulsa rally was such a dud. With a picture of him obviously getting off his plane, and he's got his tie undone. Six excuses for why the Trump-Tulsa rally was such a dud. Now, many of us don't get past the headline. Wow, it was such a dud. Well, what got my attention was I was looking at some headlines on another major website, Daily Mail, which also has a lot of raunch, junk entertainment stuff. I was just looking at some of the headlines, and it said two of Donald Trump's campaign staff who were at disastrous Tulsa rally test positive for coronavirus, but officials say they were, quote, wearing masks. Whoa, so it was a dud. Now we're told it was disastrous. Now, if you read through the whole article, it barely mentions the rally, and when it does, speaks of it in much more measured tone. So the rally was a dud? Okay. Well, this is much worse now. The rally was disastrous. Disastrous. This is a headline. Okay. Then another report on Politico, it says this, inside Trump's Oklahoma debacle. And it just strikes you as all letter D's, right? Is a dud? No. Worse than that. It was disastrous. Oh, no, not even that. It was a debacle. What happened? This must have been like the end. It's over for Trump. And then reports, widely reported, Trump is furious. There are news reports, Trump furious at underwhelming Tulsa rally turnout. NBC, other news outlets. And by the way, the White House denied this on the following first day of business on that Monday, said no such thing. But there's the report, Trump furious. And then I noticed this because Trump did a rally last night at a church building in Phoenix, and that was basically a packed house. So remember the first rally Saturday? Now this is his next one on the campaign trail. 3-4 days later, Tuesday, Donald Trump finally gets the packed mass-free reception he craves at 3,000 strong students rally in Phoenix and calls coronavirus kung flu again as cops fire pepper balls at protesters gathered outside. So that's what they're going to tell you about the rally. That's what you need to know is this part. But notice he finally gets it. Now, think of it like this. You're watching a baseball game. It's the first game of the season. Leadoff hitter gets up, pops out to second. He's out. Third inning, he gets up to hit again and lines a single to right. He finally gets a hit. Finally, the hit. What are you talking about? It's the second at-bat of the season. What do you mean, finally? Okay, I give you a question with 10 choices. It's really hard to pick. Okay, what do you think the right answer is? Number three. Nope, it's not number three. Number six. That's it. You finally got. Finally, it's the second shot. And in this case, just a few days later from Saturday to Tuesday, but the rally was a dud, a debacle, it was disastrous, and now he finally gets what he's looking for. Now, do you realize the impression that's created through that? Do you realize this new reality that is created out of that? And whether you're pro-Trump or anti-Trump is completely immaterial. Well, was it really, though, a dud? Was it really disastrous? Was it really a debacle? How about this report? Look at this. The rally was watched online, 8 million viewers, 7.7 to be exact, 8 million viewers, this is a Forbes headline, watch Fox News coverage of Trump's Tulsa rally. The other major news outlets didn't run it. Fox did. 8 million viewers. Oh, hang on. This number, the exact number, 7.7, broke all records for a Saturday night broadcast on the Nielsen ratings in the history of Fox. The dud debacle disaster drew in more viewers on Fox on a Saturday night than in the history of the network. And what about those that watched online stream? According to this report, 4 million more. Trump campaign touts 4 million online viewers for Tulsa rally. So between the physical, physically present people, then you add in the big numbers, 8 million watching on TV, 4 million more watching online, 12 million people watching a part of the rally, some watching all of the rally. And then as far as the base that was there, they seemed energized. I watched little parts of it just to see what was going on. Trump seemed energized. Again, you may like him or hate him. You may love what he said or hate what he said. That's immaterial. And others said there were people that went away. They were on their way, but protesters, they didn't want to have to walk through the protesters with their families. And then this is during COVID-19. Maybe it's not so disappointing to draw that many people who are willing to come to a rally in the midst of concerns about infection and passing on the virus and sickness and death. But the bottom line is, a reality was created by the secular media reporting on something a certain way. And by the time you dig down and read further details, then you realize, okay, I'm getting an interpretation of the events rather than news about the events. Even if I'm giving excerpts from a speech, right, you could grab an excerpt from my show today, a little bit here, a little bit there, and post it. Brown says this, Brown says that, and it would be completely non-representative of the overall content and message. And friends, it happens on the right and it happens on the left. I am not making a partisan political statement today. I'm happy to if I feel to, but I am not making a partisan political statement. I am not making a pro-Trump, anti-Trump statement. I am not making a pro-CNN, anti-CNN, pro-Fox, anti-Fox statement. I am pro-truth. And I'm urging you, do your homework, dig, and then come to your own conclusions. You'll see the cry on the banner on the TV screen sometimes, and you're looking and reading something, but what you're hearing is different. I don't mean two different stories. I mean the headline is not the same as the details of the news behind that headline. I've seen this on the right, and I've seen it on the left. I'll look at a headline, it's like, whoa, this is going to be full of information, very revealing, and I read it, it's like, it's a dud. That was a dud. There's nothing there. You got to watch this video. Embarrassing moment. I remember in the Jeb Bush campaign. Embarrassing moment where he has to urge the small crowd. This is a good moment to clap. You know, it's a lifeless campaign without any energy behind it and so on. And I watched the video and it was like nothing. Yeah, he had a little town hall setting and he made a comment. And then justly, this would be a good time to clap. It's like a preacher saying this would be a good time to say amen, but just misleading. So fake news is out there. And like I said, it's on the right, it's on the left. And we really need to not just be moved by a headline, not only to just be moved by the article, the information, the video. If you're serious about the subject, check it out. Do a little research, dig. Don't be a dupe of the media. We'll be right back.
want, for fire we please. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, welcome to the broadcast. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH. We're going to get to your calls shortly. One thing that we need to talk about, getting perspective, is different ways that Americans look at our history, different ways that Americans look at the flag, different ways that Americans look at patriotism, the strong points of America, the weak points of America. And often in the midst of this, folks who feel very passionately, they say, hey, we sacrificed for our liberties. We sacrificed for our freedoms. We sacrificed so you could have freedom of speech. And those are veterans. And through an interesting series of events, I met Donna, I'm going to let her pronounce her last name for us, with an organization, Operation Decisive Victory, that's looking to help people that are often neglected and forgotten by our society. Just another one of these things, like, how do we miss this? How do we let these things pass by? So we're going to get to calls shortly, 866-34-TRUTH. But first, so glad to be joined by Donna. Tell me how to pronounce your last name.
It's Donna Paramesswar.
Paramesswar. Okay, the way it looks. The way it looks.
Yes,
Donna, way it looks. Tell us about Operation Decisive Victory.
Sure. Our organization is a veteran-focused organization. We are a nonprofit 501c3. The name comes from Decisive Victory is a military terminology, and what it means is to have a decisive end to a battle in order to go proceed to the next phase of the battle and ultimately win the war. And that's exactly where we were in our own personal journey. We were in a war at home, and that's the way we would like to call it. We had all these several battles that we were facing. All at once, it was a new environment to us, and as a family, in 2017, we found ourselves in some legal drama that we just didn't know. Every phase, every avenue we looked towards, the doors seemed shut to us, or the system, or the process, or the programs that were in place did not cater to folks like us, and that's because, you know, we do everything right by the system. My husband has PTSD and traumatic brain injury, and he gets his treatment. We are very involved with the VA. I'm a caregiver for my husband. You know, I work for a living to support the family. So when everything comes together, there are programs and services out there that don't meet the criteria, or we don't meet the criteria for as a family. And we find ourselves lost in the sauce today. And that's how this organization was started. Operation Decisive Victory is not looking to take, to replace any program or service out there. It's not looking to replace any organization or any other nonprofits that are out there. But we just want to work with everybody to make sure that folks like us or folks that don't meet the requirements or the qualifications as per these nonprofits, other nonprofits, those folks are still being helped too, and they're not turned away because the system cannot handle them.
So Donna, you're speaking in particular about veterans in need that somehow get discarded, that don't seem to fit the system, and even if people have good intent, they end up left out. And it's tremendously frustrating when the system that you thought was for you doesn't seem to be sensitive to your needs. So what are some of the specific things that you do to help veterans, or what kind of people should reach out to your organization?
Everybody. So anybody can reach out to our organization. We don't have any fees. Our services are free to our veteran population. We don't have any membership. So we don't have any requirements. Like we serve all eras. We serve all issues. We tackle legal. We'll get you sound legal consultation. We tackle mental health support. We tackle homeless prevention, not just by paying the rent, but also working with them, or also not just by paying the rent or eviction and helping with evictions, but also working with them and establishing a good home, establishing, you know, getting them ready for the workforce. We tend to look at the bigger picture. It's easy to put a Band-Aid and have a solution, a generic solution that we provide, but it's a lot harder to understand the person that's asking for help, understand the situation, understand the family environment. And ODV's focus is the holistic approach. We don't want to just focus on the veteran. We want to make sure that they have the support system. We look at it as in its entirety. There's a physical piece of it. There's a mental, emotional, spiritual. All these things have to come into play and be taken care of in order for the veteran to feel whole again, in order for the family to feel whole again and to be successful to integrate back into society. The way we look at it is when we are in service, active duty service members, they train together, they deploy together, they take care of each other, they have each other's backs. The families have a support system when their respective service members are deployed. The families get together, take care of each other, look out for each other. And then they're done with service. We completely take them out of that environment, that routine and structure that they're used to, and we throw them into society that is not ready for them. They don't understand how we function. They don't understand why we are the way we are, our lifestyle, our decisions, and, they don't understand our family. And how do we expect them to just completely be ripped away from family that they know and to integrate into a society when they're not equipped for it? When they can't reach out and ask for the assistance, and only to be told that they don't meet that requirement. In America today, you have to be labeled disabled. Most folks look at a disabled person or a veteran, and they want to see missing limbs. They don't consider PTSD as an invisible wound. So those are some of the things that we tackle with. There are organizations who are specific to dealing with veterans, with post 9/11 veterans with PTSD. There are organizations specific to dealing with veterans that don't have limbs, that need wheelchairs, that need that assistance, that extra assistance that comes with that. But what our organization does is we don't consider any of those as criteria. You don't have to be a combat veteran to be assisted by us. You don't have to be post 9/11 or Vietnam. We even have a spouse, a widow of a World War II veteran, and she needed help with benefits filing. And so we try to work with all people because we realize through our own journey, we realize that a lot of folks are falling through the cracks because there are certain criteria that they will not be able to meet. And, sometimes it's good on them that they can't meet it, but at the end of the day, when we need help, we need help. And our veteran population is a very prideful population. They're not going to ask for help unless they're absolutely needed. And for someone to come to us and then to turn them away, that just makes them lose hope in life. That makes them lose hope as far as their purpose. And so we just want to bring all that back and bring the hope and the faith and the spirituality back into the mix of everything else that our veteran families are working and dealing with.
Yeah, Donna, I appreciate what you're doing. Friends, go to Operation DV, as in Decisive Victory, OperationDV.com. Again, this is a service that's being sacrificially and freely provided to help others. We didn't have a hard situation, Donna, with my mom when she was in her late 80s and early 90s. But when we moved her up to stay with us, at a certain point, we weren't able to just care for her in our home. And we got her a place to stay, but it was out of her budget. Well, we found out that because she was a veteran, she and my dad, too, who had passed away years earlier, she was entitled to certain benefits. We never knew about it. But to get the thing done was massive. We knew people that were trying for years. Well, we worked with someone. And they got it done in a matter of a couple months, and it was a life changer. So, exactly. When I hear about the suicides, the high rate of suicide, depression, I haven't been in the service. I can't relate to what others are going through. But obviously, there are a lot of needs out there. So, friends, check this out, Operation DV, as in Decisive Victory, OperationDV.com. If you're a veteran in need or know a veteran in need, get the word out to them. And Donna, may God's blessing be on you as you labor to help people who are often forgotten in our society. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate the time.
You bet. All right. OperationDV.com. And we'll get that out. We'll tweet that. I just tweeted that out, in fact, moments ago. The needs are greater than we realize, certainly greater than I know. All right. We were talking earlier in the broadcast, before some of you may have joined us, about reporting on the president's rally on Saturday night. And this is not pro-Trump, anti-Trump. Just a lot of the report, the dud, it was a debacle, it was disastrous, etc. And it's really not accurate, especially when you look at the overall scope of it. Let's go to the phones. We'll start in Colorado. No, we won't. Josh was going to talk to us about that very rally. Let's go over to Barbara, an African-American veteran, I see, in Baja California. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Praise God for you, Dr. Brown. I am still listening and still learning.
I know exactly who you are, Barbara. Cancer survivor, Barbara also. I know who you are.
The sister that was just on, she knows what I need, because this transition has not been easy. Yes, I will go to Operation DV. Praise God, he was on today. But that's not why I called. I called for the other stuff.
yeah. Go ahead.
You need to explain this to me, Doc. You need to explain this to me. Right now, I'm sitting in my home in Baja, California, on the beach, watching the waves break, listening to this craziness that's going on in the world, but I understand why it's going on. Please explain to me Genesis 9:25. May God, no, 26. Noah said, may the Lord, the God of Shem, be blessed, and may Canaan be his servant.
Yep.
May God expand the territory of Japheth, the Asians. May Japheth share the prosperity of Shem, the European, and may Canaan, the African, be his servant. Now, it's like that in the Bible, and it's like that in the world, and I don't understand why we don't understand it. The reason we don't understand it is because it's a mental thing. It is not a physical slavery. It's a mental slavery. It's a lack of education, lack of home authority.
All right, Barbara, I got a break. So I'm going to explain that on the other side of the break. Thanks for calling. Genesis 9:25 has been used as justification for enslaving blacks, used as justification by Christian leaders in American past history. Is that what the text says? Be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. I want to comment on Genesis 9:25 in a moment. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Hey, to everyone donating today on Facebook, thank you so much. There were complications with our donate button being linked to Ask Dr. Brown, but that's been done. So if you're watching on Facebook and want to help us, every gift of any size is a tremendous blessing, really. It accumulates, and it makes a difference. And soon enough, like, oh, we can produce this new special video, or, oh, we can expand onto these stations. So thank you. Thank you for standing with us. We appreciate it. And our friends standing with us on YouTube and all of our supporters, Patreon supporters, torchbearers, thank you for being part of the team. By God's grace, we're making a difference, especially at a crazy critical time like this. One of my friends, if you're listening, buddy, you know who you are, recommended that I read some of the writings of Ibram X. Kendi. And the book that seemed to be the most important was Stamped from the Beginning, The Definitive History of Racist Ideas in America. And I'm only in the early parts of the book, but plan to dive back into it. And he's laying out just historically, as slave trade opened up from Africa to Portugal and then other parts of Europe and then ultimately America, that the Africans were looked at as inferior. they were more like animals. They had an uncontrollable sexual appetite. They were bestial. Well, why? Well, it's probably climate and the hotter climate and so on. So that was one of the theories. And I was less familiar with that than the theological ones. Then the justification, well, they are a cursed people. Where does that go back to? That goes back to Genesis 9, and there's a curse on not the son of Noah that offends and sins, who is Ham, but a son, a grandson, future descendant, Canaan, and then he's cursed. He's going to be a servant. He's going to be a slave. And then somehow that becomes the black people. That becomes Africa. And then it becomes a justifiable enslavery because they're an inferior race. And then, of course, if you can get their souls white through the gospel, wonderful. And in fact, if you bring them over as slaves, even though they're doing hard, cruel work and they're in servitude for life, it's better than the bestial conditions of Africa and you can save their souls. So that was some of the Christian justification for this. And of course, there was African-African slave trade, black-on-black slave trade to this day. There's slave trade in the Muslim world, and of course, there's human trafficking. Human beings keep finding ways to sin and oppress others. We understand that. But what Barbara was saying about education is that it's important for all of us as parents and leaders to instill as best as we can a sense of value in our children. And in the Lord, a sense of destiny and purpose. But when we've been broken by a culture or viewed a certain way historically, then often it's difficult to do because we don't have that in ourselves. We're about to make available to all of our constituency for free an award-winning documentary. I don't want to mention the name of it yet, but it showed on PBS and the producer of it reached out to us and said, would you like to make this available to your constituency? But as we had someone on a moment ago talking about her husband who has PTSD after serving overseas in the military, there is an emotional trauma. There can be a PTSD from a terrible history. For example, concentration camp survivors often carry something with them that is then transmitted to the children, even though the children grew up in freedom. The children of slaves or the grandchildren of slaves may be carrying something that's been passed down. So how do we break wrong mentality? By the way, I'm not blaming. I'm not ascribing blame. I'm saying how can we help and stand together? One thing is to correct wrong theology. One thing is to renounce wrong theology. One thing is to say, no, that is not what Scripture says. And in fact, the Canaanites were enslaved by the Israelites. That did happen. That was fulfilled in history. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, we get back to Josh in Colorado. We lost you there, buddy. Welcome back to the broadcast.
How you doing, Dr. Brown?
Doing well, thank you.
Good. So I'm a reluctant Trump supporter. I was kind of a never-Trumper Marco Rubio guy, and then I kind of jumped on the bandwagon late. And I started loving him like a lot of Republicans probably when some of the he got through some policies that we all kind of support, but I think his reelection campaign and that rally was just a terrible political strategy. And I think I agree with you on the fake news part of it, mm-hmm. but he sets himself up in so many bad positions on a constant basis. In the middle of a pandemic, he could do an outdoor rally. He could not brag about having a million people wanting to come to his rallies. And he could maybe not call it the Kung Flu virus. And he possibly, if he had a little bit of self-control, did not say that he wanted to reduce, I know maybe he was joking, reduce testing. To me, he's making bad political decisions.
Well, he's his worst, in my view, he's his worst enemy. And yep. Again, he got elected campaigning the way he knows how. And with all of my wise counsel, if he listened to it, he might never have gotten elected. God knows. But no, I mean, through the pandemic, things he was saying, the ways he was approaching things, the way he has attacked his enemies, the internal strife, the fact that so many people become enemies, that he's going to throw Jeff Sessions under the bus and this and that. You have someone like Ann Coulter who writes the book In Trump We Trust and now refers to him in ways that I couldn't even quote on the radio because they're so ugly. And Yeah, so there are many good things he does, which I appreciate. If it comes to voting for Donald Trump versus Joe Biden, I vote for Donald Trump. But there's no question that there are other things that are being done that are unnecessary. In other words, you can fight without being nasty. You can be strong without being antagonistic. You can make your point and refuse to bow down to the agenda of the radical left without stooping to the same level. So, I second that. Whether it was good strategy or not, holding the rally, I can't say, because you had the protests drawing massive crowds and people seemed happy to come out in that kind of setting. You know, how to do it, what's best or not. But, again, let us be clear that our hope is in Jesus, not in Trump, not in the political party, not in the political system, not in the Supreme Court, not in the Democrat Party. Our hope is in the Lord. And when you think of me, I want you to think of Jesus, not Trump. Yes, I voted for him in 2016, plan to vote for him in 2020. In fact, Josh, thank you for the call. It's a perfect segue. To say this. I've spent months on this book, Evangelicals at the Crossroads, Will We Pass the Trump Test? I've researched carefully. I've read a lot. I've listened to both sides, evangelical, never Trumpers, evangelical, always Trumpers. I've tried to get God's mind with a 10-point strategy as to how we can vote our conscience without hurting our testimony, how we must live in the society and be gospel people first and foremost. And this is written as a Trump voter myself. We have a unique special offer on our website. When a new book comes out, we normally offer it that if you can pre-order it, it comes out July 13th, you can pre-order it and you will get a signed and numbered copy. So you pay a little extra. It's like a collector's edition, and it's my joy to sign it, put a scripture verse in, and send it to you. So we just sent out an e-blast yesterday. We're doing that with the Trump book, but I decided let's just do something extra. When you pre-order from our website the signed numbered copy, right, we're also giving you free my 2018 book, Donald Trump is Not My Savior, An Evangelical Leader Speaks His Mind About the Man He Supports as President. So you'll get two books for the price of one, the signed numbered copy, collector's edition of the first printing, plus that. So just go to our website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. You can order as many as you want. We'll sign them to as many different people as you want. And with each one, you get a free copy of the 2018 book, which will trace even my own history of opposing Trump in the primary strongly, and then where things have gotten over the years and why I have concerns and so on, and why we must put the cross before the flag. So take advantage of that. Now, if you prefer to order an ebook or just a paperback unsigned and spend less, go to Amazon, and or you can do that as well. And we're gonna do something as well for those who order on Amazon and bless you with it with some other things. But here, if you want to get signed numbered copy plus Donald Trump is Not My Savior as our gift to you, go to the website now, askdrbrown.org. Pre-order today. The day we have the books in, we'll start getting them numbered, signed, sent right out to you. That's mid-July. And if you do order on Amazon, we'll be letting you know a couple weeks from now what to do if you ordered on Amazon in terms of some e-resources we want to make available to you. Tell a friend. I believe it's going to be a critically important book, especially during the rest of this year, but for years after, this is going to be very important, because evangelicals and Trump, some would say by electing him, we've stopped the nation from going completely off the cliff. Others say by standing with him, we've damaged our witness for years to come. How do we sort this out? Well, that's why I wrote the book. And again, everyone standing with us on Facebook, YouTube, thank you for your contributions. Thank you for our faithful partners. Together, friends, we're touching a lot of people around America, around the world. Jesus is being exalted, and you are a crucial part of it. Tomorrow, that's it. Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.